differences of opinion.
Representative Hill.
I'd suggest that the U.S. Code might answer a lot of those questions. Since the entire subparagraph is as defined in the U.S. Code. So if we go there first, we might answer. I think there are good questions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Maybe we could assign those questions to Mr. Lawson and have him go look them up and report back to us.
I think that's a great idea.
That's his field.
Would you do that for us?
I'd be glad to attempt it. The reason I don't have the answer is I didn't have that code at hand. I've been talking to some of the people who are proponents. Unfortunately, I didn't ask them either as to whether that, what that definition is.
It is current law. I would assume someone that worked in that area would know what that means since it's current
law. We haven't had any uranium mining,
Mr.
I think.
Mr. Goddard knows. Okay, good.
1958, I believe.
Representative Hill.
I think we should, in considering these questions, we should look at, on page 3 of the bill, line 4, it's subsection 17, subsection section 1. Defines radioactive waste means all material which is discarded, unwanted, or has no present lawful economic use and contains mined or refined isotopes. So we could probably use that to define whether the overburden would be considered radioactive waste or not.
We have Don Goddard, who has answers to some of these questions when we get them up here. Any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
Bruce Henderson from Portland.
Representative Hooley and members of the Energy and Environment Committee. I am Bruce Henderson, a resident of Portland, Oregon. I am an environmental and engineering geologist by background and am currently registered as an engineering geologist with the state of Oregon. I have worked for several years with conservation organizations on environmental aspects of mining in Oregon. I would like to state my support for Senate Bill 419, which seeks to remove the exemption of uranium mill tailings from the state's definition of radioactive waste. I would like to confine my testimony to addressing the possibility of isolating uranium mill tailings from the hydrologic or natural water cycle. There is no way of ensuring complete isolation of uranium mill tailings from the surface or groundwater systems over the short or long term, given the present uranium mill tailings stabilization technology. And this is unfortunate, given the high level of residual radiation, toxic chemicals, and heavy metals remaining in the uranium mill tailings. Add to this the sulfuric acid remaining in the tailings from the milling process, which dramatically increases the solubility of the heavy metals, toxic chemicals, and radioactive elements, and you have the potential to contaminate surface and groundwater supplies. Although several potential uranium mining sites exist in Oregon, only two are of immediate concern, the Lakeview area in south central Oregon and the McDermott area in southeast Oregon. Both of these areas are located within the northern reaches of the Great Basin, an area characterized by semi-arid to arid climate and, in geologic terms, a high incidence of earthquake fault activity. Over the short term, the hydrologic conditions within these areas are highly variable from season to season and from year to year. Wide fluctuations occur in shallow groundwater levels and surface water runoff. The potential for surface and groundwater contact with the tailings is real. The impermeable clay layer underlying the tailings is not truly impermeable, and over the years is subject to deterioration from repeated drying and wetting, leading to desecration cracks and from chemical processes. Over the long term, geologically speaking, the possibility of isolating the tailings from the hydrologic cycle is slight. Given the 100,000-year average half-life of the radioactive elements within the tailings, about 1 million years, or about 10 half-lives, is required for the radioactive elements to decay to a safe level for exposure to plant and animal life. Within the span of 1 million years or even 100,000 years, the climate of the Great Basin can change dramatically. study of the last 1 million years of geologic records of the Great Basin shows that the area was once covered with large freshwater lakes, numerous streams, lush grasslands and forests, and a generally high water table. Many of these conditions prevailed up to 20,000 years ago. These conditions could prevail again long before the radioactive elements are safe for exposure to life forms. Even though these areas are now sparsely populated, with changing climatic conditions, the areas could become densely populated agricultural and urban centers long before the radioactive decay time is up. As mentioned earlier, the area is subject to earthquake faulting. Faulting can very quickly alter the hydrologic conditions of an area by causing dramatic changes in stream courses and in groundwater levels. An example of this is the appearance of springs along recent fault lines. Since over the short and long term, the isolation of the potentially toxic uranium mill tailings from the hydrologic or natural water cycle cannot be assured, I urge this committee to support Senate Bill 419 and prohibit the storage of uranium mill tailings in Oregon. Thank you.
Any questions for Bruce?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I don't know who to ask this of, because we don't seem to have, we never get the original bill in our files, and I just wonder if there were some changes in the Angus version of the original bill that was introduced in the Senate, and what they were.
As far as I remember, there was one deletion from the original bill that was introduced on the Senate side, and I'm sure that Sally and Chris could tell you further about that.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you very much. We are going to, we only have Don, and I will call on you, Don, before today is over with. We only have Don left to testify in this bill, but we have a couple of people here from EPA that have to catch, leave by 3:30, and I would like to change and go back to House Bill 2238 that we had intended to do at the beginning of today, dealing with whether the state should have control over hazardous waste in air and water, or whether the federal government is really the question on this bill, transportation of hazardous waste. And who do you have coming up, Stan, from, do you want someone up here from EPA, David, or? Why don't you just get everybody up here and explain the amendments? And this was a bill we heard, oh, probably last January. And
number?
January 21.
January 21. We were, House Bill 2238. It was a bill that we decided to postpone because they were still waiting for the regulations from EPA.
Madam Chair, Standard Files, Department of Environmental Quality, I appreciate your taking us out of order for a moment. To my right is David Handlein from the EPA office in Seattle and works in on the hazardous waste issue for EPA. And to his right is Rich Ryder from our program, who manages the state's hazardous waste program. I would like just to make a few introductory comments and then let particularly Dave, if he has some comments to make before he has to catch his flight back, and Rich. What you have in front of you is the culmination of a process begun in 1977 for the state of Oregon to assume control and responsibility for administering the hazardous waste program in the state of Oregon. Since 1977, a variety of pieces of legislation have passed their way through the legislature to make the state's program similar, if not identical, to the federal program, to assure us at some point down the road that we could receive authorization from EPA to administer the hazardous waste responsibilities. When the bill was originally introduced, we were aware of three or four revisions that we needed to make in the statutes in order to achieve compliance with the requirements of EPA. Shortly thereafter, it came to our attention that there were additional changes, not only in DEQ statutes, but some in the Public Utility Commissioner statutes, and some in the statutes relating to the Health Division that also needed to be revised. And I think in the audience today, there are representatives of the PUC office, of the Health Division, and of the Attorney General's office that have participated at one time or another in the drafting of the changes. In the short summary that I've distributed, I think, individually to most of the committee members, we've indicated that in order to receive authorization from EPA, we need to prove through our statutes and our rules that the state program is equivalent to the federal program, that it is consistent with the federal program and consistent among states, and that the program is indeed enforceable in those areas where it is necessary in order to achieve authorization. The broad question is, should EPA administer the program in the state of Oregon, or should DEQ? And we, the regulators, and industry, the regulatees, I think, and EPA, if I can speak for them, feel that it would be in the best interest of the state of Oregon, for the state of Oregon, to administer that program. There are a variety of reasons for that. We've identified those in the front page of the handout material. The obvious one is the proximity to the area that's being administered.
Excuse me, what handout material?
This would be...
Are you talking about the amendments or some
no,
other written?
No, it's June 15th, 19th. We've got additional copies that we've brought.
That's in our office.
Thank you for bringing addition.
Hey, while he's doing that, a question.
Sure, Representative Parkinson.
This is a landfill solid waste thing the state's responsible for, right?
This is
solid waste disposal site the state's responsible for,
yes.
Right? Do you have a fund set up to make sure that I'm post-closing, you'll be able to have the funds take care of it?
The proposed revisions included in the bill address that issue, interestingly enough, this time for hazardous waste sites, and this time a requirement of the Environmental Protection Agency, as a matter of fact. Not done in exactly the same way as the bill that you had earlier, but nonetheless it is in there for hazardous waste sites, not for solid waste sites.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Is this portion of this in your budget for this year?
Yes. The Ways and Means Committee authorized the one-half FTE that is necessary for the program to be operated by the state as opposed to the federal government, with most of that FTE allocated in the area of developing the rules, the rulemaking process. But that is included in the bill that has been, I think, signed by the governor.
Madam Chair, follow-up. I think I'm following up on Representative Parkinson as to whether you have the next biennium share of the closure of the site set away in your budget.
I missed something. Maybe Rich picked it.
I don't think you have to until it's within 5 years of closing, maybe.
Well,
I think
so. You probably haven't started setting up your special post-closure fund yet. Your
Rich, yeah, Representative
now.
Parkinson, I think maybe.
Rich, we need your name for the record.
Yeah, Richard Ryder, supervisor of the Hazardous Waste Program. In the case of the Arlington disposal site, it's the site operator that must establish the fund. This current year, fund is $232,000, of which $146,000 is in cash in certificates of deposit that the department holds, and the remainder is in a surety bond that the company purchased. Our goal is, by 1990, to have $500,000 in cash that the department would be holding. And that's for closure and post-closure monitoring.
That answers my question. It is being done. Stan misunderstood the question.
I was back on the previous bill.
Okay.
At the bottom of page one of the material that was distributed, we've listed what we think are some of the advantages of the state administering the program vis-a-vis the Environmental Protection Agency. Not to be critical of the Environmental Protection Agency, but we feel that one of the inherent advantages is operating the program based in Portland headquarters with 9 branch offices throughout the state. closer to those that are being regulated and closer to the public that's likely to be impacted by the handling of and this proper disposal of the hazardous waste, or improper disposal as the case may be. The rulemaking process, we think, is probably more accessible to the general public and more accessible to those that are to be directly impacted by those rules, that is, the regulated bodies, as the Environmental Quality Commission goes through that process, rather than the Environmental Protection Agency. We probably, being somewhat of a smaller agency with a smaller focus, we feel that the merger of our program and enforcement staff gives us an advantage of working with the regulated bodies with the same staff, both those that have helped develop the policies as well as those that have to enforce the policies, rather than having that separated, as is necessarily inherent in the federal system. As I say, the beginning of this transition dates back to 1977. We've worked closely with EPA, the Public Utility Commissioner's Office, the Health Division, those regulating, or those regulated by our rules, the private sector and industry, and I think, and in this instance can speak on behalf of all of them, since we've gone through this process at some length, all support the changes, and at least amongst those parties, there's no difference of opinion. With that brief introduction, I would like to have the EPA make any comments that they feel is necessary, since they're on a tighter time schedule than certainly either Rich or myself.
Madam Chair, one quickie, I guess, before we get over there.
Sure.
On Legislative Council dash 2, the same as dash 1, in this regard, on lines 14 through 16, the Commission may adopt or amend, repeal any rule, license, and so on. I guess the only nagging little doubt I've got in my mind, it doesn't make it clear as to whether that covers any future rules or law besides PL 94580 that may come up in the future, as to whether you have to come back for additional authority or whether this gives you carte blanche to knuckle down to any rules that come down in the future.
Representative Anderson, I think that's a good point. Section 2 language was taken out, is a copy, I think almost a word-for-word copy, of the language that was utilized when the federal government established the Clean Water Act and needed to make a similar type of delegation to the states for that act, and that was duplicated for the purposes of the hazardous waste program. I know the intent, as you read that section starting from line 9 down through it, is definitely tied to this specific act to get specific authorization. It's more of an inherent statement, I guess, as you read this section, than an overt statement of that.
And I just wanted that on the record, is all. Yeah. I'm comfortable with it if we have it on the record.
I think it's a good point, and I don't know if Legislative Council could respond better in terms of the legal sense, but I know that was the intent.
Go ahead.
Okay, Dave.
Okay, my name is David Hanline. I'm with the Region 10 Office of the Environmental Protection Agency, and I'm with the Hazardous Waste Program there. I came today primarily to be available to respond to any questions. I was not planning to make a testimony, but I assume that there could come up some questions that you might have regarding what might happen, say, if the state program were not authorized, and of course that keys into whether or not such legislation is before you is passed. I would also be available to answer any questions about perhaps the adequacy of some of the changes before you, if there are any questions that come up there.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, I guess the bottom line is, do you have a good feeling that the chances of the new federalism being able to take over and allow the state to manage this has a pretty good chance of going through now?
I would say yes, it has a very good chance of going through.
Madam Chair?
Representative Parkinson.
Now, as I understand it, the state DEQ will be taking over some of the duties that you've been doing.
That's
some
right.
of your responsibilities.
That's right. And in reality, the State Department of Environmental Quality has already taken over some of those duties. There has been what I would call a partial authorization of some of EPA's responsibilities already. And we've been working with the state to move towards a complete authorization of the federal responsibility.
Do funds follow?
Funds have been awarded in the past. I certainly can't give a guarantee for what will happen in the future. It is EPA's intent to continue funding a RCRA, being the Resource Conservation Recovery Act program. And EPA would be responsible for carrying out that program if states were not authorized.
A further question now. We're doing things that you used to do, evidently. So has this allowed you to cut your staff in Seattle?
Somewhat. That's true, somewhat. Some of the activities that have been our responsibility have been assumed by the state. Now, the hazardous waste program is a fairly recent program, so we cannot point to cuts in our staff that have occurred, but we would have had to take on greater responsibility were it not for the state program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I guess one more thing on the record, I guess. It is the policy of the Reagan administration's new federalism to, when they let the state take over some of the functions they've been handling, is also send funding along with it. And I'd just like to have that on the record that some future date we'd like to maybe see it in the budget.
Do these new amendments, David, do you feel they adequately cover the regulation of transportation of hazardous waste by air and water?
That's true. They adequately cover that regulation of transportation of hazardous waste.
Representative Hill?
Will the federal EPA maintain any responsibilities over transportation of hazardous waste upon the passage of this legislation?
We would retain responsibility until the state program is authorized. We would then have an oversight role. We would not have a direct responsibility. As the federal legislation reads, the state program would operate in lieu of the federal program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Move the amendments dated 6983-238-2.
Representative Anderson moves the amendments on House Bill 2238-2 dated from Legislative Council dated 6983 parens G2.
Madam Chair, hate to interrupt. There's one letter change. Throughout the document, they've tried to use the phrase hazardous waste. One place they
on
slipped
page
up.
14, line 16. They left it in the plural.
Hazardous wastes. And we would just, for cleanliness, suggest that we take that one S out of there and make it uniform all the way through.
Page 14.
Line 16.
Line 16.
Friendly amendment.
Representative Anderson moves the deletion of S on line 16, page 14. Part of his amendments. Motion. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
I think this is a good idea of the state taking over responsibility from the federal government. We can take over. And also, I have to say, with all due respect to our visitors and EPA, I feel rather more secure with the state handling this than with the EPA, considering recent controversies the EPA has been embroiled in. So,
2 megawatts.
I think it's a good measure.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
If we hurry up and vote while there's only five of us here, my vote will count for something on this committee for one of the few times this session.
There's the six, Representative.
You don't leave me.
Representative Parkinson, I'm about to leave.
I know, wait. Any further questions? Any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Troop. Representative Van Leeuwen?
Yes. We're voting on the bill.
We're voting on the amendments.
That I have in my hand.
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Bradbury?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Parkinson?
Aye.
Representative Priestley? Representative Trahern? Chair Hooley?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative, do I have another motion?
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2238 to the floor
but do pass recommendation.
Representative Bradbury moves House Bill 2238-2, Legislative Council, the amendments we just adopted, to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Van Leeuwen?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Bradbury?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Parkinson?
Aye.
Representative Priestley? Representative Trahern?
Aye.
Representative Troop? Chair Hooley?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Parkinson, will you carry this on the floor?
Okay.
Sure.
That's unanimous. Nobody here can file minority reports.
No minority reports. It's a pretty big bill. People always raise the bus.
They can pull it off.
Yeah, they can pull it off.
You want it on the consent calendar?
I don't want to carry it.
One of the few unanimous.
But I want to speak to it.
Human Resources puts everything on the consent calendar.
The only disadvantage of putting it on the consent calendar is that Representative Hill can't get up and say, what?
Representative Parkinson, would you carry?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Now, back to where we left off. Senate Bill 419, we have Don Goddard from Department of Energy, and he is the last person that I'm aware of that is here to testify on Senate Bill 419.
This is a transport of hazardous waste, a lot of responsibilities turned over the
Madam Chairman, I'm Don Goddard from the Department of Energy. I'm here on behalf of the Director, Lynn Frank. Perhaps I could make my comments as to what this bill does and what it does not do.
Yes, please.
First of all, I don't believe it changes anything with respect to non-uranium mining or milling. If any of those activities were to take place and generate a radioactive waste as defined in the existing statute, it would be prohibited under current law. This bill would extend that prohibition to uranium as an ore. The distinction is that many other minerals won't include sufficient amounts of radioactivity to ban them. However, uranium overburden and mill tailings generally have sufficient radioactivity in them that this Bill 419 would ban them. So the only change is as it relates to uranium.
So you feel this bill would ban uranium mining?
Yes.
What if they mined it and do what I think both Chris and Sally talked about, where a lot of states were mining and then sending that to a mill in some other state, for I think South Dakota, you said, sent up to Utah. Would it allow you to mine and send it to another state?
Madam Chairman, probably not, because what's being shipped out is the ore. What would remain is the overburden that is generally just lower quality ore of an uneconomic nature that they dig out and lay aside. That would likely be classified as radioactive waste under the changes.
The overburden.
The overburden.
Would you explain to this committee what overburden?
Madam Chair's did.
That's it? I mean, it's just low level, not enough.
It's the dirt, minerals, rocks that lie over the economic ore.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Is this what down in Representative Trahern's district, in my district, we commonly call country rock?
Madam Chairman, I don't know.
I like Willie Nelson.
Representative Parkinson.
Do we mine any marble in Oregon?
Madam Chair, I'm not a geologist, and to my knowledge, we don't, but that's just as a layperson. I don't know.
Because I've heard the statement made that the halls here in the Capitol have more radioactivity than the waste thing at Wachang. So I would assume if we have a marble quarry, that would maybe put them out of business.
Madam Chair. Representative Trahern.
In answer to Representative Parkinson's question, I have a large marble quarry in our district. It is at the present time closed, but there has been a lot of marble mined out of it. There's a lot more available.
Is it radioactive?
I haven't taken the Geiger counter off the check.
Madam Chair, I believe it's the radon
Anderson.
More than the actual ticking of the Geiger counter or whatever.
Representative Hill.
That concrete emits radon gas. Radon gas is emitted by marble concrete.
Okay. We're reading about a whole new subject area here. Representative Parker.
Mr. Goddard, is it?
Yes.
Now, you've attended a lot of the hearings and things. Didn't someone say that? Okay. My question, I was intrigued by one of the slides, and I should ask the question at that time, but it showed dust billowing from this pile, but I thought I heard somebody say that the pile had been covered by dirt. So can you tell me about that?
Yes.
If it's covered by a layer of dirt, how can the tailings be blowing around?
Representative Parkinson, I think they stated it was covered, but that was the evaporation from one of the ponds. That's what they stated.
Madam Chair, at a uranium mill such as what existed at Lakeview, there are several ponds. There's an area in which the tailings themselves go into, and then liquid on the top is drawn off into evaporation ponds. At Lakeview, the location of the tailings has been covered with dirt to preclude the tailings themselves from blowing around. The evaporation ponds, in some cases, are uncovered, and so the dust can be blown. Perhaps I should give a few words about our background and our involvement in these bills. I am from the Department of Energy, and we're responsible for coordinating the state's efforts for the cleanup of Lakeview and future.